From the KDLL Newsroom, this is the Kenai Conversation. I'm your host, Jay Barrett. This week, two pre-recorded segments. First, we talk about the U.S. Census coming up next year, and in the second, we hear about Project Homeless Connect. In this first segment, Jesse Curtis of the Census Bureau and Tim Dillon of the Kenai Peninsula Economic Development District join me in the studio.
We're here talking about the census. The 2020 census comes up every 10 years. It was put in place by our founding fathers. It's a constitutional requirement. They want to know how many people are here. They want to know where we are and all sorts of things. Jesse, maybe you can tell us all the things that maybe our founding fathers want to know and what we want to know today and how maybe those things have changed.
Sure, I'd be happy to. So the goal here is, like you mentioned, it's to count everybody in the country and count them where they are. The reason for that is it helps us determine things like political representation, seats in Congress, but then also at the local level, how we draw our legislative district lines, how we draw school district lines. It helps us understand the dollars that come into our communities. So census collects all this data, finds out where people are in the country. And then with that data, the federal government distributes billions of dollars to Alaska. We got $3.2 billion from the 2010 census data. Then that money comes into our communities for things like Medicaid and Medicare and school lunch programs and federal bypass mail and a whole variety of programs. The other thing that the census data is really important for business development, for people, businesses to understand where they should potentially expand or where they should open up shop. It helps like Alaska Airlines decide where they're going to fly and how many flights they're going to have there. I don't know if you'd like to expand, Tim. There's a lot of information.
Yeah. No, you're spot on because it's a great tool for a lot of different people that use it. And whether it's for business expansion, you know, changing lines of business or little things just like, and it's not really a little thing, but the reduced school lunches for the kids at school or the food bank or any of the other folks that when you start looking at different kinds of grants or even you go back and you look at the earthquake. One of the things that, you know, they look at is census numbers and how many people were affected in different places. Because, you know, when Jesse mentioned the $3.2 billion, that's $675 billion that the federal government goes ahead annually and allocates out. The way the state of Alaska is set up, right in around 21%, of our budget for the state is coming from the feds for repair of roads and bridges, you know, operating certain healthcare units and a variety of those kinds of things. So we want to make sure that people are counted and where they should be counted. The Kenai Peninsula is the size of West Virginia. We've got 50 some thousand people there. Every individual that gets counted is somewhere between $3,000 and $4,000. So that's very, very important for different programs, and it ties all back to quality of living.
Mm-hmm. So, an historical perspective, the federal government back in 18 whatever probably didn't have a lot of these sort of grants and stuff that we've got today, and the need for these kind of numbers. But the as we were talking before we went on the air, the census become simpler. So what were the original the purpose of the census? I mean, just to see where people were in the growing country? Or
it was all about democracy in the beginning, right? So it was figuring out where people were and how they needed to be represented in order to have an effective democracy. They wanted to make sure that everybody had fair representation in our government. So drawing those legislative lines, congressional lines, based specifically on where people are.
Mm-hmm. You know, you have to come, it comes back to two very, very important words. The census is about power and about money. Power when it comes to, you know, all the different lines and who gets an additional representative and where those lines are all drawn, and money. And those are two things that are very, very important to Alaskans as a whole.
Right. So let me ask you about the size of the sentence. Jesse, you said it was 10 questions. And actually, when I'm ordering pizza, I give them more information than I'm giving the census taker. Explain that to me. What happened to the big packet, and why is it only 10 questions now?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that. And a lot of people's memories are like, man, I used to have to sit down for 2 hours with the census taker. It was the worst time of the decade. I hated it. So we fixed it. Ever since 2010, it's been 10 questions, and it's just the basic information. You mentioned ordering a pizza is more information. You're giving them your credit card. That's a lot more information than we're asking for. We want to know how many people live in your household, who they are, tribal affiliation, ethnicity, and that's about it.
Huh. So why so little information? I mean, well, why is it so much less than before? How is the Census Service compensating for not having the information you had before? And what was that information?
So the Census Bureau operates year round. So between the decennial censuses, these censuses we do every decade, they are constantly rolling out surveys, the economic surveys. You know, when you see information on, basically everything that the government produces in terms of data comes from the Census Bureau. Things like unemployment rates is data that we're collecting year round. And so what we've done is we put those surveys out on smaller scales between the decennial censuses. So we're still able to gather the same amount of information through a variety of surveys, but then really making it the focus of the decennial census this decade, every decade census of being just a population count, where people are, how many of them there are.
So the in-between decennial counts is dependent on surveys then?
Yep, it's all surveys. So there's the American Community Survey, which is produced by the Census Bureau, and they gather most of that information that the census prior to 2010 did gather.
And is that just like a regular phone survey you get? Somebody, it's just a random call?
It's usually still a door-to-door type census. They just don't go to every door.
Oh.
So they'll target communities and then go door-to-door.
You'll also see, like if you go to our website, you'll see a lot of different data data dashboards and things. A lot of that information we're pulling from census information. And as it becomes available, we update and make changes and things. And that's how folks make decisions. You know, that's how they're making a decision whether to expand their business or, yeah, I think, you know, if you look at the trend, we're going to need another school here. Or, you know, well, maybe we can look at moving students from this place to that place. A lot of those kinds of decisions. It isn't the sole area, but a lot of the decisions are based on what kind of data you can provide. I want to get back to, you know, the 10 questions when we talked earlier, because being an Alaskan and living here on the peninsula, you know, I know there's lots of us that don't want to open up their door and see somebody from the federal government. So a couple of things that are going on. One, we're making sure that if there's a job open on the Kenai Peninsula, I want someone from the Kenai Peninsula to be hired. And that's part of what Jess's job is making sure that. But the key thing is when people say, well, I don't want to go giving the government all sorts of information. If you have filled out or applied for your permanent fund, which according to everybody, all the news, everything, everybody applies for their permanent fund, or just about everybody. You have already given the government more information and more questions have been answered than what you're going to answer on the census. And I think that's really, really important for people to know, because the permanent fund is something that everybody understands, you know, to one level or another. They know what that form is. They know what they got to do. They know what they have to do in order to prove they're an Alaskan. If you've done that and gone through that process and every year go and update it and things, you've given out more information than you'll be given out for the census this year.
Huh. I have two questions about that. One, why doesn't the Census Service or Bureau use that information then in Alaska, since we're probably unique in that way, where every citizen from newborns to the nearly dead are on that list? And two, when will the nation start doing something like that? That's probably never going to happen, honestly. electronic registration of citizens across the nation?
That would make my job a lot easier if they did, but I don't know that it's ever going to happen.
Right.
And I can say I've heard that question a lot of times, and man, that would be nice if they could just take the PFD and be done with it, or have, you know, every 10 years an extra 10 questions on the PFD with that specific information that the census collects. Unfortunately, the state government and the federal government haven't worked out that plan yet, as the Census Bureau policy is that the Census Bureau, as an agency of the federal government, carries out the census mandated by the Constitution on a 10-year decennial basis.
I also want to throw out, and I don't want to hear from all sorts of people saying that, you know, I've misspoke about Alaska's data control and things, but the federal government, it's a felony if you use any of this data. If any of the folks that are taking, you know, the census information going from person to person, you know, they're under strict guidelines of what they can do and how they can do. The same is not in place right now with the state. Now, I'm not saying that it's loosey-goosey, because it's not, but it's, they don't match up at this stage. And that's a bit of concern for the federal government.
Sure, sure. Let's talk about the people who would be gathering the signatures then. How many folks do you need in Alaska? How many do you need here on the Kenai Peninsula?
We plan on hiring anywhere from 1,500 to several thousand across the state. That said, it's all dependent on workload. So the way the census works is, if you remember from 2010 or years prior, you get the survey in the mail. This is the first time in the history of the census that people have the option to go online and fill it out. But regardless, they'll still get that in the mail. They'll get the invitation starting in mid-March to go ahead and fill out the census by paper or online. And then what will happen is, if they don't fill it out, we'll go ahead and follow up with that knock on the door. That's the time when they get the survey, the knock on the door. So we're hoping the more people that just go ahead and fill it out, the less the workload is, the less staffing we need. But we're anticipating about 1,500 plus statewide. On the peninsula, it'll be probably several hundred.
Wow. So these alternate ways of doing it are, that's news to me. So let me ask you about that. So you can get it in the mail, or you can do it online, and then that information is somehow collated and sent to the people who are sending out the enumerators, and then they go to just the places that haven't returned them.
Yeah. So the best thing that you can do if you don't want that knock on your door is to go, is you'll get the invitation in the mail, and it'll have a specific code that is directly related to your housing unit. We don't know who you are and where you live, but we know that somebody lives in your housing unit. And that's how we that's how we build an understanding of the whole country, is where are there places where people specifically live. You'll go online and you'll fill it out, and that's obviously real time. So you fill out the survey, and then we know, okay, this housing unit has completed their obligation. They've completed the survey. And then at that point, you can pretty much guarantee yourself that you're not going to get a knock on the door following up.
Now, when you start looking at the Kenai Peninsula, just specifically what we're doing here, back almost 9-10 months ago, the borough mayor asked KPED and myself to oversee the census to make sure that everybody got counted. So what we've done is we've created a committee that we have, that we have people from Hope to Nanwalek, Port Graham, Tyonek, Clam Gulch, you know, the entire borough. And what we're trying to do is make sure that there are opportunities for people to go online and fill out that form, because that's really the first line of defense for us as far as we're concerned. Mm-hmm. So we've been working with city managers and community leaders from the whole borough to identify places, like, for example, working with the libraries, because the libraries all have, for the most part, have internet access, and educating them and trying to make sure that they're going to be available to be for someone to come in that doesn't have internet access. Talking with the folks from Senior Meals, talking to the people from some of the other programs that exist, whether it's through the school district or wherever. You know, I had John O'Brien, the superintendent, and his staff in my office 2 weeks ago as we were walking through all the different steps, because, you know, the person that gets that thing in the mail, that's the easy person. That's the easy one for us. What we're concerned about is the transient students. the students that might be, their homing situation might be a little difficult right now. So they're couch surfing or they're staying with a friend, making sure we can get to those folks. Some of our vets, some of our homeless people. So we're working with a variety of different organizations around the borough to identify those people. And not so much have new events, but identifying what events exist between now and May and that we can connect with. You know, we were out at the Industry Appreciation Day. Again, just educating people so that people knew that, hey, it's not the old census. It's 10 questions, real simple, easy for you to do. Mm-hmm. But we want to make sure that we're getting the people that are off the road system or off the grid for whatever reason.
Right, like Project Homeless Connect coming up.
Yes, very much so.
That. Yep. Make sure people know it's not the revenueers coming down their driveway.
Right.
Okay. You know, I had a friend down in Kodiak. She had been earlier this year doing some training with the census. I didn't really ask what the whole deal was, but is that the same kind of job? Are people being hired for this already?
Well, there have been a variety of people that have been hired, and I'll let Jess speak about that in a second. But I know that there's been people, since they've known that we're involved with it, that have come to us and said, hey, how do we go ahead and apply? And with working with Sarah Bieber over at the Department of Labor, we've been able to help people get, you know, apply and things. We actually have one person that works in our building right now here in the CAPED building that got a part-time job and has been out verifying addresses, because there's different stages of what needs to be done. You know, somebody asked us earlier today about how do I know if I'm going to get it in my post office box or you're going to try and send it to me at my house and I really don't get mail. Well, that was one of the things that in August, September, and the beginning of October that was being done was that address verification. Uh-huh. So there's a variety of different levels of jobs.
Yeah, just to piggyback on that, we've been hiring basically consistently around the state since early 2019. And again, most of those jobs are going to come in spring of 2020, starting the positions themselves here on the peninsula will start to ramp up around March and April. But we've had jobs we've hired out for across the state already, including Kodiak, including on the peninsula.
Oh, wow. And they're going around verifying addresses and what have you?
Mm-hmm. And also recruiting assistants. We've hired around the state. We have one recruiting assistant here on the peninsula. We've hired field supervisors. We have an entirely separate operation for counting rural Alaska because it's historically so hard to count. And as we all know, there's a lot of challenges that come with getting out to rural Alaska, particularly in the winter months, which is when we need to do the census before spring breakup, before people are out fishing and subsisting. And so for that operation, we've hired people around the state, including on the peninsula, for both travel enumerator positions and also travel supervisor positions.
Ah, you know, I was going to ask. Oh, go ahead, Tim.
I was going to say, why don't you talk for a couple of minutes about what's happening today and what's going to happen every Monday for the next couple of months?
Yeah, sure. Thanks. So we'll be at the job center. Our recruiting assistant, Mark, will be at the job center every single Monday for the next couple months from 11:30 to 1:30. And he'll be there to assist people with their applications, to answer questions. The application's really easy. You can do it on your phone, on a computer. It takes 10, 15 minutes. It doesn't require a resume or your work history. It's really just your basic information. So you can certainly do it without coming to the job center. But if you'd like some extra assistance or you'd like to use a computer or you have some questions, general questions about the census, that's a good time to meet up with us and we can help you through the process.
Talk about the five things that you, in order to be eligible, there's five basic things and just about everybody I know qualifies with those five.
Yeah, same. So that requirements are so simple. You have to be a U.S. citizen with a valid Social Security number. You have to, if you're a male born after December 31st, 1959. So 1960 and on, you have to be registered for the Selective Service, which is a federal hiring requirement. And you have to have an email address. And that's it.
Hmm.
Right? So it's pretty simple. The jobs pay $28 an hour.
Wow.
Great pay. We did that on purpose. Secret's out. And it's because we have a huge workforce to hire. It's a temporary workforce. The jobs are flexible, part-time to full-time. So it's a really good opportunity for people to just make some money, extra money on the side. Basically, the way it works is if you're hired for a census taker position, you tell us what your availability is. Maybe it's 10 hours a week. Maybe it's 20. Maybe it's 40. And at the beginning of the week, you'll go ahead and create your schedule and say, I want to work a couple hours this day or that day. And then you'll get assigned workloads based on whatever availability you have. And then you'll be making $28 an hour to help us complete the census in your area.
Wow. Can you choose between traveling or just working in your area?
I'm glad you asked. So it's all one applicant pool, not only for the area, but for the state, for the nation, one applicant pool. We hire based on where people are and what their availability is. So for different types of jobs, we may need different requirements. If we were to call you and offer you a position, say that involved traveling, and you're like, oh, I don't have time for that. I have a couple kids at home. I can't leave for days on end. You can just decline the position, and then we'll say, well, would you like to be put back in the applicant pool? And if you would, you say yes, you go back in the applicant pool. And then, you know, a couple weeks later, you could get another call from us offering a different position that does actually meet your needs and your schedule. And then you can go ahead and accept at that time if you're still interested.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say the person that was I mentioned earlier that had applied for a job and got a job, she did some stuff here locally, and then they came back and said, you know what, you did a really good job. We've got a couple of other opportunities. Would you like to go there? And she actually came into my office and she said, hey, I got an opportunity to go to blank, blank, and blank. And I was like, hey, that's pretty cool. And she said, yeah, I'm going to talk to my boyfriend if that's okay. I'm going. That'll be fun. So sometimes you get an opportunity to visit someplace else in Alaska that you've never been.
Sure. What about background checks? Do you guys do those behind the scenes with the Social Security number, or what are you guys doing?
I'm glad you asked. So essentially the way it works is once you've been selected for a position, we do ask you to get fingerprinted, and typically we'll go ahead and fingerprint you. We have staff strategically placed around the state to fingerprint folks, and then it goes through the background check. It's a pretty relaxed check. It's very fast. Most people make it through. We're certainly not going to be sending dangerous people to people's homes, but otherwise, you know, a lot of people do make it through that check. And then once you're through, we'll let you know, and then we'll set you up for training. And then from there, it's off to the races.
Well, one thing that I want to make sure that everybody hears Jesse say this, a UA, do you have to pass a drug test?
No.
Oh.
We do not drug test at the Census Bureau.
Okay. That's been a question I've been asked an awful lot by people. So
that's pretty important in Alaska.
And for some reason, some people don't believe me when I tell them. So it's great to hear it directly from the federal government.
Right. Wow. A lot of Western states that applies to, I imagine. What about physical requirements? Just be able to get around?
So we're an equal opportunity employer. If you're unable to complete the specific duties, we'll do our best to accommodate you in any way. But generally, a lot of our positions do require, you know, some mobility, some walking, because you're going door to door and collecting this survey the bulk of the positions, though we have positions available, especially our supervisory positions, where they're work from home and you can potentially not even leave your house and manage a team from there.
Hmm. Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Are they insured by the Census Bureau?
Yes and no. You can receive insurance after working for the Bureau for 90 days. Most positions don't last that long.
Right.
Most positions are a handful of weeks, potentially up to 2 months, and then you have the option to get extended if there's further work that we'd like you to do. But most people don't receive insurance.
So they're not covered if an accident happens while they slip on the ice or somebody's dog attacks them.
We still have workers' comp, of course.
Okay.
So, yeah. But in terms of providing health insurance, we don't provide health insurance. But, of course, workers' comp. Okay. Something happens to you on the job, the government's going to take care of you.
Well, that's good to hear.
Yeah.
You guys have a lot of paperwork in front of you. Are there, is there information there I should be asking you about?
No, it's just wanting to make sure that people know how important it is and that it means an awful lot of money. And again, it comes back to those two things, the power and money. And a lot of your neighbors rely on the census information being accurate. And even down to, you know, we're working on the EDA funds for the earthquake damage. Even that comes back to census numbers. So it's just really important for people to do. And I want, I know a lot of times people want to be able to talk to somebody locally. So please, if people have questions, feel free to reach out to me. I'd be more than happy to talk to folks. And my number is 242-9709. The other thing to remember is as people apply for a job and that, you know, a couple weeks later or a month later when they get that phone call back, don't be looking for the phone number to be a 907 number.
No.
Because it won't be. It'll be a California number. It'll be a 202.
California or Washington. Yeah. For whatever reason, we weren't set up with any local area codes in our office up in Anchorage. So,
So if you screen your calls like a lot of people do, and you applied for a job, and you know you're sitting there saying, "Why have I not gotten a call?" But you've repeatedly seen a 202 or a Washington number. Well, there's a reason for it. So check your messages and things.
In this next segment of the conversation, we hear from Jody Stewart, who made a presentation last week to the audience of the combined Kenai and Sol.net Chambers of Commerce luncheon about Project Homeless Connect.
So my name is Jody Stewart. I have been involved with Project Homeless Connect for the last 9 years. The last 9 years, we have been delving into our homelessness problem. So if you don't know about homelessness, hopefully today you will learn something. You'll walk away more knowledgeable than you came in. If not, if you already know about the homelessness, then let's continue to be advocates in order to get them the services that they need. So Project Homeless Connect is an event that is a one-day purposeful service-based event in our community to provide services to individuals experiencing homelessness and near homelessness in our community. So the cool thing with Project Homeless Connect is we didn't think of it. I'm always a big proponent of stealing other people's great ideas. And so this has been an ongoing project all around the nation. And it continues to be the number one way that HUD provides funding for services in regards to housing and homelessness. So this one day event is one, to provide awareness. Two, it's to provide a opportunity for individuals experiencing homelessness and near homelessness to have access to services that they couldn't necessarily get to. Transportation in our community is one of our biggest struggles. We don't have a bus system. We don't have the infrastructure for a bus system. And our public transportation system, and I can put the little hat on, I am a CARTS board member, is not functional in regards to serving people that are marginalized. It just isn't. So Project Homeless Connect was created to do these 10 pieces. The number one piece when it was created down in California was really to produce a level of political and civic will within the community to show and highlight this issue. In order to do that, we have to execute an event. We have to actually put on Project Homeless Connect. And so through parts 2 through 9, that's really what that's talking about, is putting on this one-day event. Now, in other places across the state, in other places across the nation, you might see multiple events in a year. We here on the Kenai Peninsula aren't quite there yet, after 9 years, to do more than one a year. Our hope and goal has always been to do a summer project, but it just hasn't come to fruition yet. So I am the Project Homeless Connect media person, which is number 9, the reason why I'm here, and I will be always the voice of the voiceless. Those people that are experiencing homelessness and near homelessness are not going to be up here to talk to you today. And so just as we think about the holidays, as we think about spending time with family, also think about those people that don't have anything, because that's really what this time is supposed to be about, is helping our fellow neighbor and being that kind person that says hello and opens the door. We also do the data and stuff, and I'll cover that here in just a moment. So the political and civic portion of this, and the reason why it's important to chamber members. In other communities, Project Homeless Connect is led by a mayor, a governmental structure. It is led by a social service chairperson or employee at some level of government. But guess what? Our borough is not that kind of borough, and so we don't get that. So we have to think outside the box. We have to figure out how we can get everybody engaged in this event. And I can tell you, over the last 9 years, our community has come together through donations and in-kind donations, money, and it is impressive what we all do together. And I don't think many of you know what you all are doing to make this happen. So part of our project is to try and inform everyone so that way there is a reprioritization of resources for this population. We want to create more community partnerships, and we want to talk about them. It's taken us 9 years to get to the point where we are ready to say we've got something solid, we know what we're doing, and we are ready to share it with the world. So hopefully we'll catalyze that by doing things like this starting this year and move it forward into continued advocacy in regards to funding, in regards to housing, and potentially installing some level of shelter and what that's going to look like. Anybody here heard of the Shelter Development Group by reading it in the paper, hearing it on the radio? Any? I got a couple hands. Okay, if you haven't heard, there is a shelter development group. The Clarion did a really great article about it, so I suggest you Google it because it is definitely worth looking into. So San Francisco is the creator of this whole idea. They wound up doing it through a 10-year plan, and they included city agencies, county agencies, state agencies, and federal agencies. So I also work for the Department of Corrections, so that is the state agency I also represent when I come and participate in this, because people that are on probation and parole, guess what? Often experience homelessness and near homelessness. So this directly affects the population that I serve too, so it is doubly in my interest and in my state organization to be a part of this project. So during the day of Project Homeless Connect, again, this is one day that we provide this. We provide services such as massage therapy, haircuts, veterinarian services, access to state and federal programs, housing vouchers. You might get a set of glasses if that's something that you need. If you have need of maybe phone services, you can have a contact there. We normally have GCI with their phones that are super cheap, that they have a term for it, and if I remembered it, I would say it. We also do shower and laundry facilities, meaning that we give them vouchers, so that way they can continue to take showers, have their laundry done, because one of the biggest handicaps that they have is access to water and access to facilities. So we enable them to be able to, after this event, to still have access to those things. We also provide things like job services. So job service is definitely one of our good partners. They provide a lot of the linkage to employment as well. Now, why do we care? Because there are numbers to back this up. And if there are numbers to back this up, that means that these are people that exist, that are out there, real live human beings. And so I just want to say thank you to Kenai Central High School for what they do for the students in transition, because this doesn't just affect adults. This is students too. We also include students into this process. If there's a student that wants to come to the program, it's in conjunction with Kelly King, and she brings our students to the event to take advantage of the program. So this is from 2012 to 2019. We can see that there has been a general trend up for the type of participants we have. In addition, the number of people that come are often representing other people in their household. So something that is kind of misgiving is we might say that there's 232 people that show up to Project Homeless Connect. But of those 232 people, they represent so much more because they have families, they have significant others, they have children. So when we show the data here where it says participants, you're also looking at the number of people within the households that's affected by it. So here we have our mix of females, males, and disabilities. The one point I'd like to make on this slide is that our disabilities are always kind of neck and neck with most of our stats. Individuals often experiencing homelessness and near homelessness, and I'll say this, we're often one paycheck away if we have a major medical crisis of being homeless, and that's part of that disability. Sometimes they can't ever get ahead enough to be able to keep their housing, or if they do get to keep their housing, they don't have enough to make up for keeping employment, and so it continues to kind of be that snowball effect. So disability is definitely an issue that we need to be cognizant of. So normally we talk about housing when it comes to Project Homeless Connect, because what do people need that are homeless? Housing! So imagine that. So people traditionally that are coming to our event stay with friends and family. We also have a far too high number of people that are staying in places that are not habitable to humans living there, let alone anything living there. We're talking about places that are not heated. We're talking about places that may not have full roofs. We could be talking about people living in sheds, lean-tos, tents, any of those types of things. So anything that's not habitable counts for this. And then we also have a pretty substantial emergency shelter usage as well, which would be our Lee Shore and some of our community partners, like the Friendship Mission. Friendship Mission has like 18 beds sometimes. They normally have between 10 and 12 people that they house. And then we have Freedom House for men and women, which is fairly new in our community. So those types of emergency shelters qualify in this category. The other reason why people often experience homelessness is because they don't have the money to pay for the home. So they don't have the money to make rent. They don't have the money to put down the first and last month. They don't have money to keep up on that. So jobs are normally number one in regards to issues. You'll see that there was kind of a spike in 2016 for other reasons. Sometimes it's a loss of disability income, or they could have had a spouse that was the one providing all of the income, and that person may have passed away. They may have been going through a divorce. Those type of things definitely affect it. Evictions also occur. Some people don't necessarily know the right way to live in a place because they weren't necessarily taught that at home, and so they continue perpetuating that, which often gets them evicted. Domestic violence, always an issue. Anytime that an individual has experienced domestic violence in the home, where do they go? Well, hopefully the shelter is full with people that need to have a bed, but often and too often the shelter is too full and there isn't enough space. And so we have people that are experiencing domestic violence that also don't have any place to go. So for the services received, most people find that their services were helpful. They felt like they were treated with respect. That is one of our main goals, is we hope that they come out of that day knowing that they're human and that we recognize and see them for their humanity. There is no judgment when you come to Project Homeless Connect. You'll be greeted with a smile on your face, and you'll be leaving with a smile on your face. It is one of the most positive things that I am, graciously allowed to participate in. So we extrapolated some data from last year, because last year is the most recent year. We've seen the trends. 126 individuals participated. I imagine we'll probably be close to that, to 200-ish that will participate this year, which means that we'll probably be 318 individuals impacted. Could be, I'm hoping we'll wind up breaking the 350 mark on that. And at the time in 2019, so this is again one day event, happens in January. This one-day event in January is what HUD uses to count individuals for homelessness. So we take a count, and HUD tells us what we're counting. They're very specific. They tell us what does it qualify to be homeless. It tells us what questions to ask. It provides us all of these federal guidelines. So some of this data comes because of the questions that we ask. And so, according to the HUD definition, 58% were experiencing homelessness at that particular day. Does that mean that they could have gotten a house or an apartment or something the next day? Absolutely. But does that mean that they didn't lose housing in June? Very likely. One of the issues that we have in our community that for some business owners may or may not be aware, we have a lot of seasonal homes. But as soon as summer hits, those opportunities go away. We have cabins that people have, and then they have to find new housing for the months of May, June, July, and August. So we have this really interesting housing issue because it's available during the cold months, but then what do we do with them and where do we put them? Homer actually had a very significant issue where they were having a housing crisis because of that entire seasonal issue for just normal, regular people that can't afford housing. So that just tells me how much of an issue it is across the peninsula. Now, I know with a lot of folks, it's really easy to blame housing issues and homelessness on the things that we see. The people that are doing the drugs, the people that are stealing the stuff, the people that are coming out of the criminal justice system. And so, yes, that happens. So 68% do experience alcohol abuse, developmental disability, drug use, HIV, AIDS, mental health issues, and physical disabilities. That is staggering. Incredibly staggering. If you don't think that's staggering, let me share with you why. With our communities, we have a shortage of treatment beds for substance use. We have a shortage of beds for mental health. We have a shortage of beds for people that have developmental disabilities that cannot stay on their own. We just don't have the beds. We don't have a place to put them. So even if they were doing well, even if they were moving in the right direction, we still have a struggle because we don't have the housing to put them in order for them to be successful, which then in turn cycles through and continues on in the same format. 90% said that they were homeless due to a loss of a job, and then 1%, meaning in this particular year, last year, that there was only one individual that had recently been released from jail. Now, the way HUD looks at it is they are looking, did you get released last night? So we had one person that the night before they literally released from jail and had nowhere to go. That problem is consistent and prevalent and happens all the time. I see it regularly. We have individuals walking into our office after getting released from serving a sentence, and they said, yep, I got kicked out of every place that will take me. I don't know where I'm going to go, and I don't have a place for them. There isn't housing available in our community to immediately refer to, say, you can stay here tonight. Love Inc. does a great job in trying to do some of that immediate housing needs. They do have money to do so. But even them, with the cuts to most of the state funding, has been impacted negatively. And they've been having to shorten their programs. They've shortened their hours of operation. So even if we wanted to send someone to Love Inc. on Fridays, now we can't, we don't have that option anymore. So if you release on a Thursday night and you show up to our office on a Friday morning, we are not going to have any place for you to go Friday, Saturday, Sunday and hope that you're going to be okay and you're not going to use drugs, you're not going to go drink, you're not going to go hang out with your drug dealer. That's really hard for them. This is a really difficult choice that they have to make, and they've already shown that they're not great in decision making. So that problem is very prevalent here as well. 16% of participants stated that they were homeless due to domestic violence. We have an epidemic of domestic violence in our community as well as in our state. I hate to say it, but we're really good at some really bad things, and domestic violence is one of them. We're one of the highest rated states in domestic violence. Not something to be proud of, but unfortunately we are that statistic. Now here's the good news. If we had a cold weather shelter, 89% said that they would absolutely use it. So if we have it, if we build it, 89% will come. 89% of the people would be off the streets. So I'm going to take a little plug and talk about the Shelter Development Group. The Shelter Development Group is a group of community members coming together through the organization at Love Inc. and the Kenai Continuum of Care. They have come together and they're trying to implement through the churches a one night for each church that volunteers opening their doors for 12 hours to have shelter for those 12 hours. volunteer run, volunteer manned. Nobody gets paid for it. It's just because it's the right thing to do. So if we continue to do the right thing, continue planning to do the right thing, 89% of this population will suddenly have a place to go. And if they have a place to go and they have somebody to talk to, maybe, just maybe, we can get them to the services that they actually need. 11% were U.S. military veterans. I just want to say thank you for volunteering your service. It makes me very proud to see, you know, young youth deciding to make that jump into the military. And not to dissuade you, don't take this personally, but unfortunately a lot of our veterans wind up homeless. The PTSD that they wind up dealing with makes it really difficult for them to maintain their relationships upon return, and it makes it really difficult for them to maintain housing. This is a really terrible statistic, and it is a struggle that the VA has been dealing with for a very long time. And because I'm a animal lover, I always like to throw in, not only do we have people, but we also have their pets. I love my dogs, I love my cats, and to not have them would be devastating to me. So the fact that we can provide veterinary services to the pets that belong to people experiencing homelessness and near homelessness, it's really cool. So last year, 6 animals received care, 5 dogs, 1 cat. I think even one year we had something else. I want to say it was like a ferret or something. So I mean, yeah, there's some interesting pets that people keep around. We also ask every participant to complete an exit survey. This exit survey is for us to determine what are we doing right, what are we doing wrong, and how can we improve. These are the things that concern us the most. One day a year is not enough. Pathetic. Need shelter in community. Transportation. Need buses. People disappointed that transportation wasn't there, Red Cross wasn't there, that there was no low-income housing, no child care information, that OCS was missing, Social Security wasn't there. We need a 2-day event. 97% stated they would use a community bus route system if provided. 40% were interested in Narcan kits. If you don't know what Narcan is, it is an opioid overdose drug that will help you avoid death. 18% stated that they had been in the foster care system. These are very concerning numbers, very concerning comments. Again, it stresses to us as a group that we really do need to provide this more than once. The skills that it takes to put it together is a lot. The donations that come together is a lot. What we ask of the community is a lot to do it for one day, but the need is there. So our next event is going to be in 2020. I hate saying that. It makes me feel super old. But it is going to be on January 29th from 9 to 3 at the Soldotna Sports Complex. And I love the entire concept of Project Homeless Connect because we believe that no one deserves to lose hope. And again, our purpose is just general community members. So this is not a state organized, this is not a borough organized, city organized. There's no organization other than people that want to help coming together and trying to come up with a solution. So at this point, that is my spiel as to kind of where we are in regards to homelessness. I'd love to invite you guys to come and have lunch on this day. Put it on your calendar. Come have lunch with the folks. Show your support just by being there. We don't necessarily need just stuff, but these people need to see friendly faces. They need to see people in the community that they see leading the community as wanting to help fix it. And sometimes sharing a meal is the best way to show that you care. Most of the stats that we wind up having through this time frame is from individual organizations. So individual organizations like Lee Shore and Love Inc., they keep their stats in regards to, you know, how well they can if people come back and say, you know, hey, things went really well for me. But generally, hopefully we don't see them again. And that's the only way that we know that they haven't found homelessness again. Sherry, go ahead.
And what we found, which is really interesting to me, is, and I can't think right at the top of my head, but no fewer than half every year, and it can be 50 to 80%. This is their first, every year consistently, they say this is their first event. So where do they go? And that's the question that we always want to be able to know about. I mean, do they get housing? Do they leave the community? But for each year when that question is asked, at least half of the people will say this is their first event. And that's consistent for the whole 8 years that we've been doing this. I don't know how to get that information of where they, you know, where people are going.
And HUD doesn't ask, so we don't have to track it. That's another part of the problem. When, you know, funding is tied to an organization and they want the data, then it's a lot easier to get it. But if there's no follow-up from that funding, with all of the busyness that goes into doing their jobs, it's just way too difficult to try and track. So I wish we had a good answer. Before I take Senator Michicki, if you'd be so kind, since he raised his hand second.
Yeah, I was wondering, has Red Cross and OCS never participated? Because that really seems like an unfortunate thing.
I can tell you that Red Cross has participated. I don't know if OCS ever has. I don't remember ever seeing OCS there. I can tell you, if I go back to that screen, this coming year is going to be the first year that CARTS is represented, and that may or may not have anything to do with the fact that I'm a CARTS board member. So transportation will be represented in the 2020 event. Low-income housing, it's because we don't really have like a low-income housing facility. So Alaska Housing Finance Corp is the agency that is there. But it just, it doesn't fall under what people understand as low-income housing, and so they don't think of it that way. And there is child care information provided, but it's probably just not enough. But I agree that the OCS is concerning. Red Cross has come when they can, and the Social Security Administration, again, part of the issue that we have is this is a one-day event, and we're all doing it the same week because HUD mandates us to. And so Social Security often winds up going to the Anchorage event and doesn't have staff members to bring down for us to be able to have someone. Senator Michicki?
Ms. Ma'am, just curious if there's a better way we can coordinate with DOC on release dates so that, and you're right, for those with substance abuse problems that often end up incarcerated for one reason or another, that's the first choice they're going to make if there's not another option. So can we, is there a way to help on coordinating with DOC and with Shannon over there so that we have someone waiting that can guide them to a better beginning? I know we have organizations in the state that do that specifically. Do we not have that here?
So we do have that here. So the Kenai Peninsula Reentry Coalition does exist, very similar to Project Homeless Connect and the Continuum of Care. It is a agency-wide coalition for the entire peninsula, and it's organized in efforts to address reentrance as they're leaving incarceration and along the process for criminal justice access. So if they're in the court system only, or if they're in the juvenile system, or if they're in DOC. So we are in the process of hiring a case manager in order to try and facilitate some level of programming and following for individuals that are at medium risk of reoffending. So that way we can try and target the ones that are more likely to offend versus those that are not. It's a process. Unfortunately, we don't have a public transportation system that really is conducive to this population. When you have to make a reservation a day before in advance, you know, the only public transportation system that we have, it's not conducive when suddenly you get notified you're getting released in 2 hours. It's complicated. So if I could say that there's any one way to work on that, is to create a better avenue with our only public transportation system, which again is why I'm on the board, to address that issue for those timely releases, so they're not releasing to their drug dealer's car.
Hey, so a couple things I noticed last year, and the comments kind of reflect this, is the two issues that were brought up was one, transportation actually getting to the event. That's really difficult for a lot of people. And the other thing, Sherry was talking about this, how a significant number of them were coming to the event for the first time. So how are you getting the information about this event out to the people that need these services? Because it's one thing for the newspaper and the radio to report on it, but these people aren't going on their computers to check the articles. They're not listening to their radio in the car to know when these events are happening. So what are you doing about transportation to the event, and what are you doing about getting the information to the people that need it?
Absolutely. So we are blessed with having Alaska Cab donate their cab services that day. They use their dispatchers, they donate all of their time, and we have a schedule for pickup that are on little business cards that we hand out. So that's part of the way that we get the information out to them. We actually give it to the taxi cab drivers before the event, so that way as they see people that may need it, they hand them out as well. But during the event, Alaska Cab takes the call, they'll go pick somebody up, they'll come bring them back to the event, they'll pick them up at the event and take them back home. So we do have that level of organization. And we also have had churches take buses. We have some that are kind of outside of the central area. So Kasilov, we've had a couple of churches donate their time and bring a bus of folks at certain times and then take them back to Kasilov. So yes, it's definitely recognized that it's an issue, and we do try to facilitate that. Now, as far as getting the word out, we do it the old-fashioned way, called flyers on boards. Unfortunately, that means we got to go back to the boards often because they get removed every week, and so that's only as good as it can be. And then all of the organizations that often are touched by individuals experiencing homelessness and near homelessness, they all are advertising it for us. The job center has all of our stuff. They'll hand out the cards with the transportation information, and then through my connections with DOC, I get them on over to the jail, so as people are releasing in the weeks prior to the event, they get that as well, and then over at the court system too. Many of the organizations and the services that are provided that day, they're all volunteer-based in regards to those that are for-profit. So we have people that do haircuts and massages and things, and so they're taking time out of their paid job to donate their services. I think it would be more feasible to offer it another time of year versus 2 days in a row. I think that will probably be our next step, is to try and offer one in the summer. We also have a different population of volunteers as well that would be available in the summer that we don't have during the winter. I'd like to say that that's where our next step would go for the central. But another piece to all of this, and the hope that I like to see, is this coming year in 2020, Homer will be having their very first Homeless Connect on their own. So the South Peninsula will finally have this exact same project happening then. In addition, Seward is hot on their heels, and they're trying to organize themselves to also be ready in 2020 to hold their first Homeless Connect. So hopefully not everybody will have to come into the central to this event. They'll be able to kind of stay in their home communities, and maybe that will help address the need as well. And so we'll have to see what the stats show to see if that has assisted, if it helped, if it hurt, and kind of where we're at. So that's kind of where the group is thinking in regards to it. Again, I can't say it long or hard enough. I am the voice of the voiceless. I am the voice of the people that are marginalized. They're not going to be the ones coming up here to talk to you. But if they could, I know each and every one of you would find out a way to be of assistance and to do the work that needs to be done. So I just encourage each and every one of you to think about how your business can participate, how your governmental position can facilitate something. Figure out what your role in solving this problem is, because it's going to take all of us to make it happen. It's certainly not going to be me all by myself. It's not going to be Sherry all by herself, and it's not going to be Leslie all by herself. We've got a big burden to bear, but we can make solutions, and we can figure this out if we do it all together. So you can contact me through calling my office at 283-3125. Otherwise, you can absolutely come to the next meeting, which will be on Tuesday of next week from noon to 1 at the Independent Living Center on K Beach. That is our next planning meeting. We will be having weekly meetings there every Tuesday in order to get this event up and running in January. Thank you, guys.